طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Good morning, everyone. And welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinians' struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian narrative from a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham and has continued in his memory. This is your host, John Roberts. Gerald Kaufman, the British lawmaker who famously compared Israel's actions in Gaza to those of the Nazis who murdered his grandmother, has died at the age of 86 after a long illness. Kaufman, a Labour Party member for a constituency in the northern English city of Manchester since 1970, was the oldest member of the Commons, the UK's elected lower house. It was undoubtedly because of Kaufman's Jewish background that his comments drew particular ire from Israel's surrogates, including the speech he gave in the House of Commons on January 2009, more than 2 weeks after Israel began its bloody assault on Gaza known as Operation Cast Lead. That statement to Parliament by Gerald Kaufman has been featured on This Week in Palestine two or three times over the past several years because of its poignancy and because it is such an incredible example of speaking truth to power. We will play that statement one more time in memory of Gerald Kaufman. And while you listen to his statement delivered before Parliament on January 15, 2009, please imagine a member of our Congress having the courage to do the same.
Sir Gerald Kaufman.
Madam Deputy Speaker, I was brought up as an Orthodox Jew and a Zionist. On a shelf in our kitchen was a tin box of the Jewish National Fund, into which we put coins to help the pioneers building a Jewish presence in Palestine. I first went to Israel in 1961, and I've been there since more times than I can count. I had family in Israel, and I have friends in Israel. One of them fought in the wars of 1956, 1967, and 1973. And was wounded in two of them. The tie clip which I'm wearing is made from a campaign decoration awarded to him, which he presented to me. I've known most of the prime ministers of Israel, starting with the founding prime minister, David Ben-Gurion. Golda Meir was my friend. So was Yigal Alon, the deputy prime minister, who as a general won the Negev for Israel in the 1948 War of Independence. My parents came to Britain as refugees from Poland. Most of their families were subsequently murdered by the Nazis in the Holocaust. My grandmother was ill in bed when the Nazis came to her hometown of Staszów. A German soldier shot her dead in her bed. Madam Deputy Speaker, my grandmother did not die to provide cover for Israeli soldiers murdering Palestinian grandmothers in Gaza. The present Israeli government ruthlessly and cynically exploit the continuing guilt among Gentiles over the slaughter of Jews in the Holocaust as justification for their murder of Palestinians. The implication is that Jewish lives are precious, but the lives of Palestinians do not count. On Sky News a few days ago, the spokeswoman for the Israeli army, Major Leibovich, was asked about the Israeli killing of, at that time, 800 Palestinians. The total is now 1,000. She replied instantly, 500 of them were militants. That was the reply of a Nazi. I suppose that Jews fighting for their lives in the Warsaw ghetto could have been dismissed as militants. The Israeli Foreign Minister, Tzipi Livni, asserts that her government will have no dealings with Hamas because they're terrorists. Tzipi Livni's father was Eitan Livni, chief operations officer of the terrorist Irgun Svai Leumi, who organized the blowing up of the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, in which 91 victims were killed, including 4 Jews. Israel was born out of Jewish terrorism. Jewish terrorists hanged 2 British sergeants and booby-trapped their corpses. Irgun, together with the terrorist Stern Gang, massacred 254 Palestinians in 1948 in the village of Deir Yassin. Today, the present Israeli government indicate that they will be willing, in circumstances acceptable to them, to negotiate with the Palestinian President Abbas of Fatah. It's too late for that, Madam Deputy Speaker. They could have negotiated with Fatah's previous leader, Yasser Arafat, who was a friend of mine. Instead, they besieged him in a bunker in Ramallah, where I visited him. It's because of the failings of Fatah since Arafat's death that Hamas won the election, the Palestinian election in 2006. Hamas is a deeply nasty organization, but it was democratically elected, and it is the only game in town. The boycotting of Hamas, including by our own government, has been a culpable error from which dreadful consequences yes. have followed. Absolutely. The great Israeli Foreign Minister Abba Eben, with whom I campaigned for peace on many platforms, said, "You make peace by talking to your enemies." However many Palestinians the Israelis murder in Gaza, they cannot solve this existential problem by military means. Whenever and however the fighting ends, there will still be 1.5 million Palestinians in Gaza and 2.5 million more Palestinians in the West Bank who are treated like dirt by the Israelis, with hundreds of roadblocks and with the ghastly denizens of the illegal Jewish settlements harassing them as well. The time will come, not so long from now, when they will outnumber the Jewish population in Israel. It's time for our government to make clear to the Israeli government that its conduct and policies are unacceptable, and to impose a total arms ban on Israel. It is time for peace, but real peace, not the solution by conquest, which is the Israelis' real goal, but which is impossible for them to achieve. They're not simply war criminals, they're fools.
That was Gerald Kaufman, a member of the British House of Commons since 1970, who recently died, addressing Parliament during the Israeli assault on Gaza in January of 2009. And now on to our feature presentation, which this week is a recording of a talk that Israeli attorney Gabby Lasky made to a group visiting the West Bank in Israel from the Boston area, sponsored by the Gralta Foundation. Gabby Lasky is a human rights attorney who begins her presentation by introducing herself and talking about the cases she takes on behalf of both Palestinians and Israelis who are prosecuted for the roles they play in resisting the occupation.
My name is Gabby Lasky. I'm an attorney. I'm a human rights attorney. I have a legal firm. You will meet Neri Ramadi from my office later on today, I think. And I'm also, I represent most of the human rights defenders in Israel, whether they, and in Palestine, whether they would be Palestinian, Israelis, or international. Also, I represent in the military courts, represent in the Israeli civil courts, all the human rights and social rights protesters and demonstrators, whether it be from the social protests, the Ethiopians, the Bedouins, the protesters against the gas deal, and okay, so human rights. We do mostly human rights, but mostly we do freedom of demonstration and freedom of speech. I'm also a councilwoman at the Tel Aviv municipality, where there I'm the chairwoman of the Gender Equality Committee, and I'm the mayor's advisor on sustainability and the urbanism. And I'm a I'm the chairperson of Merit's Executive. And I started as Bar. I was the first Merit's student's chairwoman. Okay, so I'm really glad that you got to meet her and that we really do have very, very good generations after us. And, yeah. So let's start by telling you that I was born in Mexico and I came here because my family was Spanish. And secondly, I want to tell you that I believe in Tikkun Olam. When we have those two points there, I have to say that as after taking that into perspective, we have an enormous weight on our shoulders to make this society a society that we can be proud of. And that we can really be a society that is light to others. Not because it is written that we are light, we are light. We are only light if we do good, if we do right, and it's in our possibility. But I think that we are in the midst of an era where things are turning dark. And it's very important to notice it and to talk about it and to act against it. And even though that all of my friends, including me, are wearing the lists of the right wing as being non-patriot, as being a bugdib, traitors, we are doing right because we're taking into consideration everybody's needs, not our own. And that is what's lacking here. So I want to talk to you a little bit about democratic shrinking spaces in Israel. Civil society shrinking spaces, that this is what's really going on. Some of the things that are going on are by legislation, and some of them are just by plain incitement. So we'll talk a little bit about that. So I want to tell you, in the end, I will tell you that I'm an optimist. Okay, so everything that I'm going to say now is that I believe that we can change. And I take into consideration what Bar was saying, we really need your help. We really need your help. So let's start by presenting a little bit of what's going on. We have the most right-wing government that has ever been in Israel. There is no really any party that is a little bit that's really center or even center left that can a little bit put into the government a little bit of sense or try to change the way that or the direction of the government is going. Some people would say that in the beginning we thought that Kahlon, Kulanos party, could have taken that role, but certainly he's not been taking that role. So we can see that in all the activities that he has been done on, all the way that his party members have been voting in the Knesset. And so there are the government is trying, although they're not saying it very openly, some of them are saying it, actually what they're trying to do is really trying to make a bigger Israel, trying to annex some of the territories, all of the territories, and they are doing everything in their capabilities, in their possibility, to shut up everybody that is against that path. So, what are we seeing in the ground? I will give you several examples of what's going on. First, regarding legislation. This Knesset has passed the legislation that is called Chok HaAdacha. It means that members of Knesset themselves can kick out a member of Knesset from parliament. It doesn't mean differently from any other parliament or as the situation was before that they can take their impunity, okay, from a member of Knesset. This Knesset has decided, they will decide who can be a member of Knesset, yes or not. Going against popular vote, yes. So this is really amazing, and it's passed by a majority of 62 members of parliament, including members of Coughlin's party. So this is first not understanding what a democracy is, and that there is, and that there is, that there are several different powers, and that the people are the ones that rule, and the members of parliament are only representatives of the people, but they are not supposed to be sworn in. And that takes us to another point that is very dramatic. This is the first time that I can tell you that in Israel, you know, sometimes we have a left-wing government, sometimes we have a right-wing government, but there's always we keep all the time the rules of the game, and according to those rules, the one that loses can always present their ideas and ideologies in a free and openly basis, in a democratic way, and every 4 years, or in Israel is every 3 years or less, you can vote and change the government. But what they're doing now, through legislation, is they're changing the rules of the game. They're changing the rules in such a manner that we will not have a free flow of ideas, that we will not have a real democracy in that sense, that when it comes to vote, it won't be a possibility to vote for another party or for another ideology, because it's going to be bashed, it's going to be almost illegal to be member of it's going to be very difficult to be part of a group of people that are against the consensus ideology. Okay, so we were talking about the Chok HaAdachah, the law that allows you, the Knesset members, to kick out another member of Knesset. And we have all the laws regarding the NGOs. The law regarding NGOs, although you can say, well, it's, you know, it's the state has the right to regulate civil society in some manner, but what is happening is that they are regulating only NGOs that get their money from international bodies or countries, or part of their money comes from countries and not from private donors. This is a very different point, because all human rights organizations in Israel, would it be Betzelem, would it be a Shovrim Shtika, would it be the Association for Human Rights, for Civil Rights in Israel, they get funding from the EU, they get funding from different funds that have U.S. aid, from funding that come from the from Swiss government, from Germany, from Sweden, and from other countries. And most of the right wing NGOs are privately funded by private donors.
Sheldon
and the Australian, what's his name? And Moscovich, exactly.
He died.
But he probably left a fund somewhere that there. So and not only that, the law shows, it asks all NGOs to present every trimester their funds, how much money they have received from all of this, you know, from the U.S., from the EU. Like, if Israel is not getting allowances from all, you know, from those countries, as if they were our enemy or something like that. But if an NGO gets them, then it's, you know, it's a mess. But the regulator of NGOs can put a secrecy veil over donations, private donations. And the only organizations, the only NGOs that have had this secrecy veil over their donations are the right-wing organizations. Okay, so even though they're privately funded, we don't even know where that money is coming from. And so we see here that there is a very strong attack on human rights organizations, not only through funding, but also through, for example, our Ministry of Education just decided that Shoverim Shtika, that the breaking the silence, will not be able to go to schools. I'm board member or legal advisor of Breaking the Silence and of Betzelem and of Gush Shalom and Machzor Watch and all these organizations. So we're all the time taking into consideration what next. For example,
won't be allowed to go to school.
We send a representative of Breaking the Silence to talk to students.
Oh, okay, so not higher education.
Not higher education. Not schooling.
Just make presentations.
To give presentations in different schools for kids that are going to go to the army. And Breaking the Silence actually is an organization that's not talking about not going to the army. It's just showing about what are the consequences of the occupation and what soldiers are doing in the name of the state, but they're not calling for civil disobedience or anything like that, as some of the right-wing organizations are actually doing. So we have that kind of legislation all the time over our heads. This is another. We have the Minister of Justice, that she's talking, first of all, very openly, that the Supreme Court should not interfere with the Knesset legislation or with the government legislation, as if there wasn't checks and balances in a regular democracy. So we're talking about the Minister of Justice that is openly attacking checks and balances. Right? She actually wrote, we can say a good thing about her, she actually wrote a very long
manifesto
or article regarding the way she thinks, and she actually she said that the Supreme Court is not on the right track. She was talking about Smith, okay? That she has to take the reins from the Supreme Court to herself and to other ministers in order for them to do whatever they want to do without the interference of the Supreme Court. I just want to tell you that the president of the Supreme Court, she actually comes from a right-wing family. Okay? Her husband, Yair Naol, was the secretary of Begin, and her son actually wanted to be elected in the primaries of the Likud party. But again, when we're talking about democracy and we're talking about the rules of the game, it's okay. It's okay that you have, it's as long as you play by the rules. And so now, again, what they're trying to do, as I said before, is they're changing the rules. As I'm probably sure that Gar talked to you about the book of the...
Yes.
Okay, so that's another thing that they're trying to do, not only through legislation, but through all the positions that they have. They're trying to change the way a democracy should work. And so if we have a minister of education that in the one hand does not believe in a real democracy and is changing the civics books, and he is introducing a lexicon of words, of how a word should be thought of, and changing the meaning of words being taught to children in schools, when he decides who can present topics in schools and who can't, based on their ideology. We have, so then we have that they're introducing to our kids. You know, they are being shown only one side of reality all the time. Then we have the Ministry of Justice again, that she believes, you know, that the court shouldn't change or shouldn't interfere with the work of the ministers. And then we have our Prime Minister. That our Prime Minister decided that he wants to be the Minister of
everything.
Including the Minister of Communications. By being the Minister of Communications, he's in charge of all the TV channels and radio channels in Israel. And so... In that way, first of all, we know that he has an own privately owned newspaper that Sheldon has been giving him for several years. You're now in the midst of the police investigation regarding that. Actually, today Uri Blau in Haaretz newspaper just wrote that Sheldon or Israel Ayom, the newspaper, has lost 730 million shekels in the newspaper, which actually means that this is not a business. When you open
a private propaganda machine,
it's not only a propaganda machine, but it's an illegal truma. A donation to be, contribution to be.
No kidding.
And how do we know that? There's another investigation against Bibi just yesterday and today. One is called 1000, the one that Milchen has been giving him cigars and red and pink champagne for his wife. But the other one, 400 shekels of cigars and pink champagne. Milchen, for Bibi to talk to Kerry to give him a working visa in the States.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the investigation about.
How many shekels?
400,000.
Holy shit.
In all cigars and champagne. It's like House of Cards. You know, if someone is. I will tell the writer, are you joking? You know, who would buy that story, you know? Come on. But every day we're hearing something new. So the other investigation against Bibi that is going on today is the number 2000 investigation. That is, you know, in Israel there's a big newspaper called Yediot Ahronot. And now we have the Sheldon newspaper that has been given away freely. Okay, people don't even buy it. It's a free newspaper, okay? So there is like hours that we haven't heard, but that is what has been written down, that there's hours of tapes saying that Bibi and Noni Moses, the chief editor and the owner of Yediot Ahronot, have been talking about the deal that Bibi will make his newspaper not appear on Saturdays, or make smaller
publications.
And what Moses will give Bibi is that in return he will give him better coverage or positive coverage. Okay. So what we're seeing now is that if Bibi can actually handle how many printed copies of Israel Ayom are going to go out, and he can decide if it's going to come out on Fridays or Saturdays, it means that he has a big say on it, on what happens with the newspaper. And I don't know exactly how to say it. Okay, what is his position there? But then it means that in that we have the Ministry of Communications that he's actually ruling over Free Press, and he's making deals, okay, for good publication. And what is happening as well is that in a democracy, we don't have only three branches of power. We have a fourth one.
Yeah.
The fourth one is a free press.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the free press is not so free. Okay? So when our government goes out and says we are the only democracy in the Middle East, we have to start challenging that, not in the sense that we don't want the best for Israel, but in the sense that we really want Israel to be a democracy. I don't have to tell you a lot about the fact that Israel cannot really be a democracy as long as we still have occupation. Okay? And as long as there is occupation, we cannot be a full-blown democracy. But we're talking about inside of Israel. And now what's happening inside of Israel is starting to be also non-democratic. The pendulum is going, if we're talking about if Israel is supposed to be a Jewish and democratic state, then we're going very much to the Jewish part and we're leaving the democratic part untouched or not giving it attention enough.
Okay.
And if we only have a Jewish state, okay, this is not what our forefathers intended it to be. It is the home of the Jewish people, but it's not supposed to be a house for the Jews only. And that we can do everything in the name of Judaism. So we really, really have to be careful. If we talk now about what's going on regarding if we're talking about shrinking democratic spaces, because of the influence of Judaism, because the influence of the National Religious Party, not the Orthodox, but the National Religious Party, they, which are becoming more Orthodox in their ways, we are again starting to talk about public spaces where women are not allowed in. I'm a council member of Tel Aviv municipality. Just before Yom Kippur, they wanted to make a big slichot, you know,
service
in Kikar Rabin, in the Rabin Square, but that no women were allowed on the party. No women were allowed to sing in Tel Aviv.
That's hard to believe.
2017. So we made a very, very big scandal and things like that. And in the end, they actually stopped. They were not allowed to do that. But it was a very strong, scary call to all of us. We have settler organizations that they understood that they have to settle in the heart, okay? So now, instead of settling in the occupied territories in the West Bank, they are sending Gavinim, Gavinim,
I don't know how to translate it, like ultra-Orthodox groups.
No, they're sending small groups of national religious parties, settlers, to come and settle in the cities.
Oh, yeah.
We have that in Lodz, mostly in the mixed cities where there's Jewish and Arab population. So we have that in Lodz. We're having that now in Jaffa.
Nazareth.
To create Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox enclaves.
They told us that they're doing it in Nazareth.
Yeah.
It's 30,000.
But it's not only ultra-Orthodox enclaves. It's ultra-Orthodox nationalistic enclaves that are in favor of the annexation. And so we have in Jaffa there's a new enclave like that in the middle of Ajami in the Arab neighborhood.
Sure.
Okay, you want to come to Jaffa? Okay. It's a free city. But they came to Ajami. Okay? And And while being there, if you read who the rabbi is, he is the brother of the rabbi from Silwan. Okay? So you know how they work in Silwan, in East Jerusalem. You know, they get one building, and then after that, they make the lives of the people that are living there hard and terrible, and they start leaving, so they enter into another building, so this is happening also in other cities. And they're trying to do that again. And while they're there, since they are being funded by the government, whether it be the Ministry of Agriculture, because Uri Ariel is the Minister of Agriculture, so wherever he is, he sends the funds, whether it be from the Ministry of Agriculture or from the Ministry of Education, whatever, they get a lot of funds, so they can enter all the matnasim, all the
community centers
and schools, and give, you know, lessons about Jewish holidays. They can teach children, they help them with their homework. Of course they can. They're being funded. So they are reaching, you know, they're reaching
into the periphery, really, into socially disadvantaged.
Exactly. And when they, and then when we have a government that is inciting against everything that is not very right wing, okay, because now everything, the Supreme Court it's a post-Zionist, they are left. Now the police, that they open an investigation against Bibi, they are left, they are post-Zionist. Now all the reformed Jews, you know, that are they're left wing, they're not, you know. So they're, if I tell you that, okay, I'm a human rights lawyer, and let's even say 10 years ago, my counterparts from the right wing, even they could tell me, you know, although I don't agree with your politics, I really appreciate what you do. I don't hear that anymore. I don't hear that anymore. Okay? We are being really,
marginalized.
We're being marginalized. And although I believe that we're the majority of Jews in the world, Jews that believe that we need to have, that we have to be the light to others, and that Israel is supposed to be based on equality and freedom, on human rights, and tikkun olam. We are the majority of Jews in the world. But in Israel, we're now marginalized. And in Israel, we're traitors. And by doing that, and because of Jews around the world have decided, you know, they want to stay by Israel, it is very difficult to criticize Israel. But as a father criticizes their son in order to teach them better, I believe it's the duty of all of us to criticize our government, to tell them we can do better, that it can be different, that it has to be different, that it has to be different.
Sorry to interrupt, but wasn't there a couple years ago where Netanyahu essentially was trying to force a loyalty statement from Jews outside of Israel, in particular in the United States, as it related to their loyalty to Israel?
I don't know about that. What I do know, that there was a Lieberman was trying to push the loyalty bill. That said, that all Israelis have to vouch for loyalty to the country and for being Israel a Jewish state. So it was really against the Arabs. It's the same as our Minister of Culture now says that cultural institution will not be funded if they talk against the state, or if they criticize the state, or they criticize soldiers. It's like, you know, Joseph Heller wouldn't have got funding from the state because he wrote the novel against, you know, that was criticizing soldiers, you know? Or Deer Hunter wouldn't have gotten funding.
I think Jeremiah would have been stoned. Isaiah for sure.
And actually, I always like to go back to the Act of Independence, which is an amazing piece of work. It's, you know, it's our forefathers, and Ben Gurion especially. And if you haven't been to his house, it's in Ben Gurion Street, actually, in Tel Aviv. It is very captivating. It's very important. Our Act of Independence has several parts. The first part, he talks about the history of the Jewish people, of what happened to us. Second, he talks about the making of Israel. Third, it's like the operative side. What kind of Israel are we going to have? And Ben-Gurion and our forefathers talk about that Israel has to be a state that bears in mind the teachings of the prophets,
right,
regarding peace and equality, and that this state should be a state that is founded, that is equal for all Israelis, that those who were born here and not. He only says that it will be open for Jews all over the world, but that's the only place where there is a difference between a Jew and a non-Jew in this land, in Israel. And he agrees, together with all of the signatures, that the partition of 1967, the UN partition, in 1948, that when we received the state in 1948 by the UN, this is the state we have. And the values that have to be a part of our culture. And now, our funding structure, our piece of that gets us all together, the Act of Independence of Israel, just not to talk to the majority of people now. They would not accept some of the important things that are written there. And this is the important thing that this state was based upon. And again, since we have to go to my other meeting, I just want to bear with you and ask you, let's do everything in our capabilities to bring Israel back on track, to make Israel a light to other nations. And it's really possible. And it's okay to criticize, not because we want to criticize, but because we want to make things better. And remember that us in merits and us in the human rights world are being marginalized. Our lives are being very, very, very difficult and tremendous. And as me being a lawyer, every day I feel how even the rulings in court are changing, and how the best of the best of our sons and daughters are being criminalized for protesting about what is wrong. And so I told you that I am an optimist. I really think that this can change. And I really think that this can be better. And I really think that in the end we can make people acknowledge that they have been taken to the wrong path. But we have to do it together, and we really need a lot of help for that. And we really need your support.
Thank you so much.
That was a presentation by Israeli human rights attorney Gabby Lasky. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. To hear the program later in the day, we realize that 8 a.m. on Sunday morning is awfully early for some, or to listen at any other time via the archive found on the WZBC homepage, simply click on Archive and go to Sunday morning, 8 a.m., and click on Listen. Each program is on this archive immediately, but remains there for only 2 weeks. To reach our permanent archive to hear any of our broadcasts, go to truthandjusticeradio.org and click on This Week in Palestine Archives. This archive is developed and maintained by our colleague Stan Robinson. Thanks for listening, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday. And this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.